Follow the power lines back from the road. No one around, so I take off my clothes. Am I the only one in the only world?
You oddly start off this new record, self-titled record, basically by taking your clothes off and running around the desert. And it almost seems like a true story the way it was written and sung.
It is, in fact, a true story. It's a song called Rattlesnake, and I was in far, far west Texas at a friend of mine's cattle ranch, a place that's been in her family for years and years and years. And I was walking around, and I was alone, and I thought that it would elevate the experience to take my clothes off and be one with nature and all these things. Of course, like, I'm such a city girl that I don't know anything about nature without Google at my fingertips, but I was feeling inspired. So I took my clothes off and I was having this commune with nature, when all of a sudden I heard something and I stopped and I thought, okay, maybe that's the wind. Maybe that's just a little squirrel, you know, scampering through the brush. And then I heard it again and it was very distinct and it was a rattle. And I turned my head just slightly and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a rattlesnake and I just took off running.
I mean, how vulnerable. That's the most vulnerable thing.
It was horrifying. Guys, nature is terrifying.
I hope you kept your shoes on, at least.
I did have my shoes on. Like, oh. Yeah. I mean, I hope it doesn't spoil the image, but I had, like, a cowboy hat and shoes on.
No, actually,
no, that
makes
that
me even more ridiculous.
Bit,
the one time I was in Montana, and I was with somebody who, you know, grew up there, and he saw a rattlesnake and just went over to it and stepped on it and tore the rattle and just handed it to me.
What?
Yeah, yeah. He has children. He says he doesn't want, you know, the rattlesnakes around his children. It was right on his ranch. It was right where, you know, kids play.
But did it kill the rattlesnake to tear off its rattle?
I stayed in the car, Annie.
I would think so. Good luck with no rattle, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's your thing if you're a rattlesnake.
If it didn't then, it would have in the future. Let's listen to a little bit of this song, Rattlesnake. Where'd you do this record? Who'd you do it with?
I did this record. Well, I recorded this record in Dallas, Texas, which is where I'm from. And I recorded it with John Congleton, who's a producer who I've worked with before on my last record, Strange Mercy. And he worked on Love This Giant as well.
Which is the project you did for the last year with David Byrne.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I wrote this record kind of in between New York, and I went down to Austin for a little bit and a little bit in West Texas.
While you were working with David Byrne? I mean, during the past year?
Yeah. So the timeline is kind of that I went and did a year of touring on my last record, Strange Mercy, and then that bled right into touring Love This Giant with David. And then I had a little window of time, you know, October to December. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I was going to take that off and just learn how to make soup or whatever. I mean, just be like, be a person, you know? Yeah. But I did not do that. I got home and I started writing this record about 36 hours after I finished a year and a half of touring.
Workaholic, so Annie? Yeah.
No, never. I just can't think of anything better to do.
Yeah, it beats making soup, but the soup's nice.
I don't know. I'm hopeless in the kitchen.
So did you find this endless need to create? Like, these ideas are constantly coming to you and you think, I can't sit still. I've got to get into the studio and get these down.
Well, in some ways, I think it was a way to help me be a person again. Because being on tour is sort of like being in the midst of a tornado. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're dropped down and you're everything is sort of askew and pieces around you. I mean, I love it. I don't mean to paint it like a like it's a bad thing. It's not at all. But I think actually the healthiest thing for me to do was to try to process, you know, the past year and a half's worth of experiences, because I'd been collecting ideas and I'd been collecting melodies and had melodies that were woke up singing in dreams, and I had all this stuff that I really wanted to finally have a chance to get down on paper and suss out. So that's what I did.
I want to play Digital Witness and maybe talk about what might be the influence of having been touring with a big band, big brass band, and working with David Byrne. And for me, in my ears and watching the tour and hearing the music, this came out as something that may have come out of it, and you can tell me if any of that's true. Let's listen to some Digital Witness.
Goodbye to your seats. Goodbye, gnashing teeth. Ooh, I want all of your mind. People turn the TV on, it looks just like a window. Yeah.
Going on in this song, first off, instrumentally, I'm speaking really. Sorry.
Well, in that song, let's see, there are guitars playing that staccato riff.
Those aren't Barry Saxes or something like that.
There is one actual horn, but there's a lot of fake kind of
hornage.
Fake hornage. I don't even know if they were necessarily horn samples, but they were something that kind of spoke like a horn. It had to, I mean, in order for any kind of synth to play that line, it kind of has to have a certain attack. Mm-hmm. And that attack is very reminiscent of a horn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my thought at the beginning of this was, is some of this sound, do you feel any kinship with what the sounds that you were playing and making with David Byrne and that big band?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can see traces of that kind of writing all the way back to, like, my second record. And then with David, I was able to really explore it more, these hocketing parts. And we made something really cool together that I'm super proud of.
Yeah.
And I was coming off of that tour, and I think I was very inspired by the fact that at those shows, people would get up and dance. And I think that dancing, first of all, the music has to inspire one to dance, but also there's a lack of self-consciousness coming from the audience that I think its genesis is a lack of self-consciousness from the performer. And our show was very choreographed and very put together, and I think I wanted to bring some of that dance, unselfconscious element into what I did next.
When I listen to your records, and this is a good thing, I have a hard time distinguishing the sounds. You know, I don't know if I'm hearing a guitar or if I'm hearing the synth here. And I think of you as such a fantastic guitarist. Is that a line that you're intentionally blurring when you play?
Well, thank you. I think I love playing guitar, and I've been playing it for more of my life than not. But I'm not as interested in kind of recreating the old lexicon of rock guitar. I mean, I think it's great, and it's an amazing history. But I'm interested in what else a guitar can sound like. And I think that's kind of the general vibe on on this record a lot. It's organic sounds. I mean, it's all people playing in a room, you know, for the most part, especially from the rhythm section. But the sounds get processed to the point where they sound inorganic. So you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get the feel of a human, but the sound of a machine.
That's very cool. The bulk of the processing of the sounds, is it happening as the musicians are playing, or is it something that, obviously some of it's done after the fact, but you know what I mean? Are they hearing that kind of sound as your other musicians are playing? Do you tweak and change the sound so much after it's done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you, yeah, a lot of times they can hear the sound that it's, you know, going to be as they're playing, you know, acoustically in a room. John Congleton, who I work with, is really great with sound. And so we spend a lot of time kind of thinking through, you know, thinking about how things ought to sound, you know, because sound has its own connotation and its own baggage and all this. So, yeah, it's definitely thought through.
It's funny you mentioned the lexicon of rock and roll, because I think about the average 18 and 20-year-old listening to music now, and so little of it is guitar-driven music, and so much of it is layers and textures of all sorts of sounds that have no point of origin. I mean, you can't, like Robin said, with even this record, you can't tell what's making what sound. And so, in some ways, a lot of guitar-based rock feels kind of played out, and there's this incredibly wonderful territory to explore. And you're sort of in the middle of both of those places, I guess, is where I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think that most of the music that people listen to today is probably not the product of, you know, three people in a room just feeling it in a rock way. You know, it's more about creating worlds, and a lot of it's being made on the computer, and a lot of it's, I would venture to say that 99% of it is made, you know, on the computer, in the computer. And probably a lot of things that you're referencing are even made in the box, you know, like you can just use the internal sounds of Logic with some soft synths or whatever, so you never have to really play anything acoustically.
And in this case, Logic is a computer program, for folks who don't know.
Right,
audio with it.
Yeah,
it's exciting. I mean, I think we're in a world where people feel like they can beg, borrow, and steal from any genre, and it's fair game. And that's exciting. You know, it's, you don't want to get stuck in any one thing.
Who are the players, by the way? Who's in that room with you?
Homer Steinweiss from the Dap Kings, who's great, and I love him. And he's playing drums. Yeah. And I also had Mackenzie Smith from Midlake play drums, and he's great, and I love him. And
also playing drums.
Yeah, it's kind of half and half. And then Bobby Sparks is playing Mini Moog, and he is a badass, and he's amazing, and I love him.
So is that a lot of the bass lines that are running through?
Yeah,
yeah.
He's very just
good.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
If you need,
I'm available. I am available.
There he is. He tours. Robin tours.
I've got a small child, but that's okay. At home. Before we did this interview, you were talking about how I think your sister's favorite artist was Huey Lewis and the News.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a cut here called Huey Newton.
Not the same dude, right?
tell us about Huey Newton.
Yeah, and I read the words to this song, and you can tell us who Huey Newton is, but I can't make the connection between Huey Newton, the Black Panthers, and this song. I'm lost. Should we listen to a little and then?
Sure.
And then talk about it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Cardboard.
keyboards are really strong on this record, by the way.
Thank you, yeah, Bob.
It's been, I have them in front of me. I've been reading them, and they're also fun to read.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Have you read the record yet? So the story behind Huey Newton is a winding road, but I was traveling so much last year on tour, and I was prescribed Ambien, which is a sleeping drug, just to help get over jet lag. So I was in a hotel room in Helsinki, and I took a whole Ambien, and what happens if you take Ambien and you go to bed is that you sleep like a baby, but if you take it and for some reason can't fall asleep, you just trip. I mean, you straight up hallucinate. So I was in this hotel room, and I hallucinated that Huey Newton was there with me, and we really bonded. Like, we kind of had a heart-to-heart.
Do you remember what you talked about?
Well, Ambien is a weird one because you just, it's more like you feel, you intuit a lot of things. It's not so literal. But we had a moment. And so I thought that I would put him in a song.
Fake knife and real ketchup, cardboard cutthroats, cowboys of information. Did you write at the time? Or, I mean, when you're in this thing, when you're having this dream state conversation with this political activist from the 60s, who's now long gone, do you think, oh, this is a song I'm going to start to write? And, like, where's the connection between the event and then starting to work on a record? Is it this continual process, or is it at the time? How does that work for you?
He was in my collection of ideas, and I wrote the words to this song, you know, this first part, in probably 5 minutes in a very, like, feverish sort of state. It's so stream of consciousness, and it sort of is meant to feel or read like, you know, when you are online and you go, oh, man, I really need to look up the Irish potato famine. I got to just check out something. And then and the next thing you know, you make a pit stop at the Black Plague. And then you're like, oh, wait, but what is Kate Middleton wearing? And then you're like, oh, Huey Newton. So it was sort of meant to feel like that. And I have to give a shout out to David Foster Wallace, because the Cowboys of Information is a line that he wrote on his, I think it was his college accounting class notes or something about the IRS. He was like, the IRS is the Cowboys of Information. And I just thought, okay, that kind of sums up what I'm trying to say here.
It might seem like an odd question, but are you a fan of show tunes or musicals, or were you growing up?
You know what? I was just thinking about this today because I put on Ella Sings Broadway on my record player before I did this interview. And I realized there are definitely, Gershwin and Sondheim, they're people who I really love and think are great. But I, to be honest with you, I don't like musicals.
Oh, yeah. Thank God.
Well, I ask because, and I'm thinking of some of the real classic ones.
This
you
is
know.
Where Robin and I
yeah.
differ. Yeah.
Well, I sometimes feel in your melodies, and I heard it in the Huey Newton track, where there's something in the structure of your melodies that reminds me a little bit of some of those classic melodies that you would hear. Because the songs were very melodic. Like, if you look at even, you know, like Sound of Music or Oklahoma,
absolutely.
You know, any of those big ones, or South Pacific, incredibly melodic. And especially in those little half steps that you'll take in your melodic lines, it really, really reminds me of that. And so I'm just curious if you spent any time hearing those growing up, if they were on in the house, or if you had any affection for them.
I definitely know the Great American Songbook, the old school musicals. Those are just kind of in my ear, I think, because my aunts and uncle Tuck and Patty would reference those a bit and play some of those classics. Mm-hmm. So I have it in my ear for sure, but I wouldn't necessarily, although I take it back. I did see David Byrne's Here Lies Love musical about the life and death of Imelda Marcos, and it was incredible. So maybe I take it back and I love musicals.
Actually, I love musicals.
I always think that when I get older, I'm going to like musicals. But yeah, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I just grew up with them. I was in the pit orchestra in school. You know, I played trumpet within all those.
They were in my house all the time. My whole family played that stuff.
Yeah.
I run screaming now. let me play I Prefer Your Love, if we could, and tell us a little about it.
I prefer your love to Jesus. Sick at the sight of them, tired walking the sidewalk in spite of them, as my headache moves from east to west. Mother, won't you open your arms and forgive me of all these bad thoughts I blinded to the faces in the But all the good in me is because of you.
Who's the you in this song? Or is there?
The you, I prefer your love, that you?
Yeah, that you.
You know, I usually don't, you know, talk too in-depth about songs because I want to leave it open for people to put them, you know, superimpose themselves into it. But I have to say, yeah, I was just listening to that song and I realized, like, you know, my mother got sick earlier, about a year ago, and she's all better now, but we had a scary, very scary moment, and so I actually wrote that song for my mother.
You just gave me chills.
It's a bit of a gut punch listening to it, actually. Not even knowing that context, it's pretty heavy.
It's beautiful. There's a moment in that song, And I don't mean this in any way other than it just is, which the David Bowie song "Ashes to Ashes" flew into my head. Do you know the line?
Killing me. Wait, oh my God! Yeah.
Robin, could you pull up "Ashes to Ashes"?
Oh my God! I think it might be the same.
it my head. I was driving, but my head turned. I had no reason to turn.
Oh, because I love Bowie, and I've been listening to so much. Everybody loves Bowie.
That's what happens when you write.
Oh, I hope that's okay.
Well, yeah, of course. Okay. David, let's call him up.
Do you think he would give me his blessing?
I think he's just gonna. I mean, the context of the song, it's so beautiful. But it's such a beautiful moment in the song too. And I don't think when you hear another melody, it's anything other than it's in the air. It's in the, you know, it just happens.
I'm about 50 seconds.
Is it okay if
50 seconds
just play this moment for people who don't know this song?
Oh, no, don't say it's true. They got a message for the action man.
Let's just all sing along to this, too.
Why don't we leave that to her?
No, I'm not really good. Here it comes. What a guy.
Oh, what a song.
Right? I think Scary Monsters, Super Creeps is actually one of the albums that has stood the test of time. Maybe better than any of the other Bowie records for me. I don't know. It wasn't one that at the time, you know, it sold well. It didn't really make it into the pop culture. But man, what a great record!
No, it is an incredible record, and it's probably my favorite Bowie record. And you're right, it was like not, you know,
yeah,
I mean, Let's Dance, that was what, right after it, and that was the one that kind of took him majorly mainstream, but I for my money, it's Scary Monsters and Super Creeps, especially the Fripp guitar playing on
that
it.
Opening
just
cut.
Disgusting. It's amazing.
We need to have a
it's
record
just
party.
Vile.
Let's have a record party.
Yes.
Awesome. Describe the cover art to the new record, the self-titled record, for us.
The cover art is me looking like a white witch on a peach-colored throne that's inspired by the Memphis design movement. It takes cues, I would say, from Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain, and the theme is near future cult leader. So pick it up
course.
Today, folks.
All right, so
I see
you,
it now.
There are lots of things that you said there that I know people are not going to connect with. So help us. Like,
did you say the Memphis design group?
I have a great question. What color is it?
What? Oh, it's there's white tile, and then I'm sitting on a peach chair, and I'm wearing this metallic dress, and my hair is I look like I stuck my finger in a light socket.
And what? And the inspiration for the art?
The inspiration, a few things.
Like this is like this like coming up with band names and stuff is like trying to figure out what is the album cover going to be.
Well, you know, it always comes from the music, and I mean there are references to. I'm a big fan of cults. Like, I mean, I think they're fascinating. There's reference in Huey Newton. There's references to like the Heaven's Gate cult. Anyway, the other inspiration for the imaging was Jodorowsky's Holy Mountain, which is a movie from the 70s that just features all of this really, really intense, bizarro imagery. Is that helpful?
I'm going with your finger stuck in a light socket. That I got.
That's fine, yeah. Just stick with that.
Do you have a favorite song on the new record, maybe one we can go out on that you keep going back to?
Well, I don't know. I have a lot of favorites, but I'm a fan of the song Birth in Reverse because, well, for a few reasons, but one of which is that it totally reminds me of a B-52s song, and I wish that I could get Fred Schneider from the B-52s to do like a talk, his version of it, you know, where he's like, Birth in Reverse or whatever, you know, like I want him to...
Birth in Reverse!
Yeah.
Hey, Birth!
Yeah. So, Fred Schneider, if you're listening, I need you for a remix.
There we go.
Stat.
The call is out.
We should go out on that then.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. This record comes out...
February 25th.
And we'll see you on tour somewhere in a city near you or me.
Oh, you can see me probably in... any city in the contiguous United States.
Nonstop.
In February and March, and some big cities in Europe in early February. And then I'll just be out. I'm be running and gunning the whole year.
And you know who's going to be in the band, in the touring band yet?
Yeah, it is the same band from Strange Mercy. So we've got Matt Johnson on drums and Daniel Mitsaris on keyboards and Toko Yasuda on Mini Moog.
Fabulous. Can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Annie.
Be
enjoyed
well.
It.
You too.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bye.
Oh, what an ordinary day. Take out the garbage, masturbate. I'm still holding for the laugh. The dogs will bark. Cry, I let them cry. in reverse in America. Like a bird in reverse, what I see.